Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In this podcast, chat about the defeat against Leeds, look ahead to Cardiff and chat about Borough striker Lae Laff. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and this is our Borough Matchday chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravanelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We're the Borough podcast that gives you all of your Borough Matchday chatter in a podcast. And what an absolute bonkers game of football Monday night. Borough got beat 4-3 against Leeds United. A game for me which I thought was just absolutely mental and I couldn't believe it happened. Especially the header from Lae Laff. Dana, Tom, key takeouts from the game last night. Dana, do you want to go first? What was your key takeout?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to keep it quite short and sweet this week. It's basically an extension on last week's key takeout. It's that we're not a million miles away from being a very good side. And if we can retain most of our key assets in the summer, which, touch wood, I think that we actually will do, then I'm excited about our prospects next season and what we can do under Michael Carrick in 24-25.
And Tom, how are you feeling?
Pretty much the same, except I hadn't given any thought to not having some of these players here next year. I saw a collection of tweets this morning from like Brentford, Palace fans, etc. going, oh, we should have a look at that Lae Laff for next season. I'm like, please don't. Please just leave him because, you know, we're starting to build somebody. We've got him playing well. You know, Rav Vandenberg's really happy here and wants to stay next season, according to his recent interview. For me, Finn Azaz is looking more and more positive every game. I think, like Dan said, we're not a million miles away. And coming out of the stadium yesterday, my main thought was, I can't wait for next season because I think a lot of our players now have either clicked or we can see that they're not the ones for the position and where we need to strengthen.
Yeah, and I think for me, I was just going to say I enjoyed it, I think, with my key takeout. I think it's just an off-it game of football. And I don't know, when Jones put us ahead, I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe we might actually kick on and do something. And then we're 2-1 down. Very similarly to the game away from home when Leeds came back within a couple of minutes. And then, yeah, I thought the game just spiraled from there, didn't it? It was just a shame that we lost it. But it is what it is. It was kind of nothing to play for. The season's pretty much done. Well, it is dead and buried now. We can't get anywhere else. So and we have everything to look forward to in the summer. But let's shout out the game then, because Jones put us ahead. Somerville equalised. Bamford, then Lae Laff, then Somerville, and then Lae Laff at the end. I still laugh. I love that header. I think it's amazing. But Dana, what did you make of the game against Leeds?
Yeah, it was exactly what you said, Johnny. It was an enjoyable game of football and stupidly not what I was expecting. I was thinking, oh, surely it can't be as chaotic as the game at Elland Road. But it was. It really was. And it was full of talking points. You had 7 goals, dodgy officiating, a penalty, Lae Laff continuing his goal scoring hot streak, Patrick Bamford coming back to haunt us at the Riverside, 2 players scoring a brace. And you know what? I was proper gutted in the end that we couldn't equalise and snatch a point. I thought that Housen shot where he unleashed when he drove it at Melier in stoppage time, I thought that was the moment. I really did. I was about to have an out-of-body experience because can you imagine that? The narrative of a Leeds boy, a Leeds fan, denting Leeds' promotion hopes. Sky Sports would have loved it, but not to be massively gutted in the end that that couldn't happen. But as I said, it's made me really excited about not only next season, but also the remaining two games of this season as well, because we still have Cardiff and Watford to play. And when you think about it, we were a competent linesman away from getting a point in that game, which would have been a really good result that continued our unbeaten run as it is. The end of that, but still a lot of positives to take and overall a really fun evening of football.
Yeah, and the offside decision. At first, I was like, that's a bit tight. I wasn't 100% sure, but then after when you look back at it, you just go, fair enough.
Yeah.
But we did a lot of stupid shit last night as well. So, I mean, you know, it was just like it was part of the game, really. I think, you know, both teams are doing some mad stuff, which they probably shouldn't have done. The mistakes were there. But some also really good football at the same time. It was very odd. Mm. But Tom, what was your thoughts as well? You weren't feeling the same enjoyment as other post-matches, were you?
No, I think I got did get carried away with the enjoyment during the game. But yeah, I've still come away from that game seeing a loss, seeing my team concede four goals. Don't think there's a lot to be happy about. I think as well, I'd gone into the game really detached from this season in general because, like you said, there's nothing left to play for. So I was just kind of like, I turned up and I was like, as long as we don't get absolutely battered and humiliated here, I'm not really asked. Obviously, while the game's going on, and especially that last 10 minutes where we're chasing an equaliser, I can get carried away with that and really want us to get something from it. But overall, the result wouldn't have meant anything anyway. So, yeah, probably being quite a downer compared to what you guys have said and what a lot of listeners will be thinking. But, yeah, I've still come away from that having seen a loss and having seen my team concede four goals, so there's not really a lot I can be happy about other than the fact that we don't give up when we're in those positions and we still have it in us to score goals. I think previous iterations of Borough probably would have lost that about 4-0 and not scored, so that's something at least.
Well, Tom, I just want to kind of ask you something. Now that the season's done and dusted, like in regards to Borough's playoff hopes, they've gone now. Would you not take enjoyment over results? Because personally for me in that game, I know that we lost, but right now what I'm wanting to see from Borough is that enjoyment and entertainment value.
I want us to end the season on a high and get two wins. But like I say, going into the games and watching them, it's a bit of a weird feeling because there's nothing riding on it really. So for me, I'm just kind of like, we can't get the playoffs. Sunderland can't finish ahead of us, which, you know, would be the only other thing that could kind of make it interesting for me. I'm just kind of like, I want to see us win both games, but also I'd like to see us bring through a few players. Well, not bring through because that'll take longer than two games, but give people a chance ahead of next season, which I'm sure we'll talk about kind of going on in the podcast anyway. But yeah, I'd still want to see us win and see us continue to develop as a team, really.
Yeah, and I think just in terms of development-wise, Zari Jones and here for another 3 years now, so he's going to be developing with us. You know, maybe he was using it as a way to increase his price tag. Who knows? But you put Borough 1-0 up, Dana. It was a little bit different from Borough normally, where we don't really tend to press as high. But does it show what we can do when Borough are pressing up much higher on the pitch and trying to break teams down a lot more quickly?
Yeah, that one and the 2-2 goal as well. I do think it has to be mentioned that with the Isaiah Jones goal, there was a little bit of fortune with Azaz's pass deflecting into Latilath's path. But it's something that I really want to see Borough make a key component of their style of play next season. More aggression through the middle third or on the wings, turning the ball over high and attacking quickly. We can do it. We have the attacking options to do it. And we showed it last night. I think this team would probably benefit more and have far greater potential in playing that way than building up patiently and slowly through the thirds. And actually, I mentioned last week about high turnovers, and Borough at the beginning of the season were ranked quite high when it comes to that. And just for the interest of transparency, high turnovers is the number of sequences that start in open play and begin 40 metres or less from the opponent's goal. This season right now, Borough ranks 7th for total high turnovers, 10th for shot-ending high turnovers, and interestingly, 4th for goal-ending high turnovers. So, yeah, something that I want to see from Borough a little bit more next season. I guess we have been doing it this season. I should probably rephrase and say I want to see us continue to do it and maybe get better at doing it, is winning the ball up high and attacking quickly, because I think when you give this team, certain players within this team, time to think about something, a lot of the time you could see them make mistakes and make the wrong pass, play the wrong ball, play the wrong type of ball, play it to the wrong player. So yeah, to give them those areas of the pitch where they just need to do things quickly, like Azaz does, for example, a very good player and just played a pass quite quickly, instinctively almost. I think that would be good to see from Borough next season.
Yeah, for me, we're a transition team, to be honest. Like a team that just likes to get teams on the counter. I think it's just it suits our players probably more than possession-based sometimes. But like, I think it's not like saying we're not as dangerous. I think we're more dangerous transition, which most teams are, than we are when we're playing with possession as well. And when we've seen that in the second half as well, interestingly, in the first half, it was very much, you know, punch for punch, and then also like people mm-hmm. trying to really go at each other. But second half, Leeds set off and played a bit of a low block, really. And similarly, what we've seen from a lot of teams this year, where Borough found it really difficult to break teams down when they do sit in and then they get done on the counter. Which, you know, Leeds' fourth goal was the epitome of that. But how do you think we can improve on that, Dee?
Well, I think teams playing a low block, they usually play 4-4-2 off the ball, so two banks of four. I think numerical advantage within certain spaces is quite important to negating that. And all of what I'm about to say is easier said than done, but I find this quite fun, so please allow me to don my tactical hat for a sec, if you will. I think from Borough, we know that they will push a fullback up the pitch to create a five-player forward line that consists of the left-back, the left-winger, the striker, the attacking mid, and the right-winger. In turn, this can create a 2v1 against the opposition's right full-back. So they're kind of caught in a little bit of a dilemma. Does the opposition right-back engage with Borough's left-back or Borough's left-winger that has obviously come inside? I'd quite like Borough to utilise our central midfielders better in these types of situations. For example, shifting O'Brien out wide momentarily to engage the right winger as Lucas Engle is engaging the right back, with Housen covering O'Brien's space so that in that right quadrant, in this example, you have a 4v2 in Borough's favour, factoring in our roaming left winger as well. It's a way of disrupting the block, and it gives good options to combine between the four and to play in behind into that space behind the fullback. I also think we could benefit from switching the play first, enticing the opposition over to engage with one side of the pitch and then switching it to the opposing side. However, with that, we will need quick play from there, as the opposition could feasibly shift back over. So yeah, there's ways. I think there's quality as well within the team. We could have better options, quite frankly. Our wide players, Silvera, just below the quality that I think we need. How we distribute our players, getting into those spaces in which we can create overloads and numerical advantages, pulling players out of position to essentially create spaces elsewhere, be it through central areas or out wide. It's about trying to shift that low block out of its structure, disrupt it, and then attack it from there. Attack the weaknesses that you basically create through your movement.
Yeah, and you can, like, obviously with all that, you can say as well, like, there's different things as well you can do. I think when you play it from the back, if you're playing the ball at wide, you want to have really 2 to 3 passes so you don't get caught. Like, so basically you're playing with like a wall behind you, that's the line. So you want to get trapped. So basically at 2 or 3, 4 passes, you want to be switching it from there, so you bring teams out your position. But also, there's one thing that you haven't mentioned there, and there was two things. There's one, you know, he plays that in between the lines, try and find the Morgan Rogers was very, very good at that. And also one which Borough are not very good at all is a set piece. You know, play for set pieces, balls in the box.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's not chat about that because we're not very good at it.
To be fair, I was going to say as well, it's very, I guess it's maybe a more of a simplistic thought, something that is kind of grinding my gears recently. But shooting more often actually can disrupt that block because you don't know what you'll get from that. You could have, you know, the keeper parries it, defence is set, but is caught out by that. You never know what can happen if you shoot. It's very simple, very basic, but yeah, could be the case. I think sometimes if you do play the ball quite patiently around like the midfield line, it's just playing into the opposition's hands. So I think there's different ways that you can disrupt a low block, to be fair.
Yeah. It's easy. I think football sometimes just about tempo, isn't it? Really? Think about it. Good tempo, moving the ball across. That's how you get things done. But, you know, let's not say forever we're not tacticals. But it's in terms of Leeds, Tom, they pretty much turned the game on its head. 2 goals in 4 minutes, very similar to one we've seen at Elland Road. They were created on the Borough's right-hand side, so poor Anthony Dykstil, who I think he had a Western Supermare last night. But I think that was probably our Borough's biggest weakness last night.
Yeah, I'd say so. Looking ahead to this game, even from a few weeks back, I remember putting in in our group chat, like, Aylin and Greenwood aren't going to be able to play. Greenwood, I think, is more replaceable than Aylin in the team. Who's going to come in for Aylin? You'd think it would be Dykstil, but then there's also the option of doing a five at the back. And we kind of went with our standard formation, put Dykstil in. But I think the key thing is, and I don't want to kind of be too harsh on him, even though he did play poorly last night, he's coming in cold. He's not had much match practice at all. It's clear that he's not in favour. And for me, I think he'll be gone in the summer. I don't think he's a player that Carrick wants to use in the team. But like I say, he's coming cold from no match practice at all. And then he's coming up against one of the best attacking sides, if not the best attacking side in the division. And then also on the right-hand side, you've got Jones tracking back to try and help out. But what I will say that I noticed yesterday, we lost a lot of physical battles either on the wings or in midfield. Isaiah Jones, for a lot of the strengths that he has, I wouldn't say that strength is one of them. You know, when I've seen him winning the ball back, it's generally been being quite quick, getting around someone. I have seen him out-muscle a few people, but it's not that many. And when you've got Dykstil, who's already struggling, and then you've got a right winger coming back who is more of a slim, slight build, and your pace is his strength, it's not your strength, then yeah, we were always going to kind of struggle on that side. And it's a shame because I did think, based on what we had under Wilder, we'd still have the link up between Jones and Dykstil. For me, I think I'm seeing more of a link up between Azaz, Jones, and Laff as well. So I was thinking, you know, maybe they can work quite well together. But Dykstil, yeah, just didn't have a good game yesterday. And I did think, unfortunately, that was the weakest part of our team.
Yeah, for me, and I've always thought this, I don't think Anthony Dykstil's a right back. It sounds absolutely insane to say that, given that we bought him as a right back. For me, he's always felt more comfortable in a back three and looked better in a back three. One that he has someone with him for extra cover, but also you can play as a five. And just in that central area, I just think he's more comfortable there. And I've always had that feeling. I wonder what it'd be like in midfield. I've always wondered what it'd be like. But yeah.
Just to kind of add something on as well. I said it in our chat last night. Unfortunately, my signal at the Riverside is absolutely horrendous. So I probably didn't go through until after I got home last night. But, you know, some of our listeners might know this. If there's some sort of league table for the amount of penalties given away by a Borough player, I wonder where Dykstil would be in that, because to my living memory, I think he'd be quite high in it. I think I've been to too many games where he's given away a penalty. I think one of the first games he played in, Johnny Meunier went to Blackburn away and he gave away a penalty. Rotherham away last season, I can't remember if that was a free kick or a penalty. I was at the bar at the time, but I came back and he'd been sent off. And then you got, like, last night as well, I'm sure there's more examples, but I know that off the top of my head, I can't think of any, but I do get the feeling that he's given away quite a few penalties. The one against Man United.
Yeah. Man United. Yeah, he got sent off against Leeds earlier in the season as well. Poor Ranf, you know what I mean? Like, I've enjoyed him over these last 4 years. I really have. But maybe this is it, you know? Maybe this is it.
I'm just laughing because in our Telegram chat, Green Matt, the iconic Green Matt, said, I wonder who's going to give away a penalty, Luke Thomas or Anthony Dyke Steele. And the prophet that he is, it was Dyke Steele. So I guess to add to your narrative there, Tom, and your query, he must have given away enough penalties for people to almost, well, to basically predict that he will be in that group. And I say group, the two people that could potentially give away a penalty in a game.
Yeah, I didn't want to make that sound like a character assassination on Dykesdale or anything, but I'm just kind of like, I'm sure this has happened quite a few times.
Because he's quite clumsy, isn't he? That's the thing. Like, I think I've really liked Dykesdale over the years, been a big fan of his. But I've always maintained the belief that he is a little bit cumbersome. I think I might have actually used that very word to describe him. But to be fair, I was more describing his ability to bring the ball out from the back. He's one of those insecure dribblers. To be fair, we have quite a few of insecure dribblers in our team. Those types of players that don't look like the ball's not 100% within their grasp. Can it be within your grasp if it's in your feet? No, but you know what I mean. But yeah, he's always been a little bit on the clumsy side, I'd say.
That's a very football cliche comment, that as well, D. You know, can it be in the grasp of your feet?
It absolutely can't.
It's like someone playing FIFA, but like constantly just hitting the right stick whenever they touch the ball.
Yeah.
Just knocking it forward.
Yeah.
Ishmael Miller used to do it and somehow keep hold of the ball. Like, all the time. It's just mind-blowing to me.
Oh, yeah, good old Big Ish. Bad times.
Big Ish. What a guy. That was when you're a real supporter, that, you know, seeing much in the football. But, I mean, speaking of someone else, you know, speaking of forwards, you know, and you know, he could have passed from being a right back last night at some points because he was absolutely everywhere. But Emmanuel Latelaf obviously put it 2-2 and then he got the consolation goal as well. But I just want us to take a trip to the Nystad club, if that's okay, because I feel like there was a fantastic Nystad on show from Emmanuel Latelaf. So he's running over, he's celebrating. Oh, that's lovely. That is
unbelievable.
That
slow-mo. Yeah. We haven't had a lot of knee slides this season, have we, Johnny? So it was good to see that.
Yeah, and you know what I really like about it as well? It glides, but also it's just a little turn as well. I feel like that,
finishing move.
Yeah, I think for me that's a perfect knee slide, you know. You know, people might laugh at me and go, Johnny, you've lost your head. You know, you haven't been on the podcast for a few weeks and you're coming back and giving people a 10 out of 10 on a knee slide. But show me a better knee slide. You know, show me
I've
a better
no
slide
notes.
After Paul Campbell.
I've got no notes on that. I think it's, I would say 10 out of 10. It's that swooping knee slide that I think is my favourite type of knee slide. That's why I gave Marcus Force my favourite knee slide of the year last season, Blackpool away. Like, that, when you swoop into it, like, kind of with the arms down as well, like the wings is, brilliant. Brilliant.
I was going to say there about the arms. Like, he didn't utilise the arms at all to, like, propel himself forwards or anything like that. They're just kind of, like, by his side. And, you know, it's all in the core of that.
Yeah, maybe this is a bit of an underrated part of the clip, but I quite like it's Dyke Steele, Jones, and Latelaf all like standing in a line. Look like they're all going to take their own turn of doing an east slide together.
Pro clubs.
Yeah. But they all bottled it, like apart from Latelaf. Like, you know, like they practiced it in the changes or something, you know, like me and Vic, you know. And so you do the knee slide first and I'll do it. And then Dyke Steele do it as well afterwards and then we'll be classed up. But I feel like there's only a certain amount of goals, though, where you can do a knee slide in, because I feel like if you did a knee slide in, like, when you're getting beat 2-1, it doesn't make sense, does it? Like, but if you start, I think you can only ever do it in a winner, or you could only ever do it in, like, a late equaliser. It has to mean something. If it doesn't mean something, I feel like the knee slides are relevant.
Or the weather as well. The weather impacts this. Again, we're kind of etching into football cliches territory here, but a knee slide is probably best when the turf's moist, right? You never want a dry knee slide.
Yeah. No one ever wants dry knees. No one ever wants dry knees. But
not you are a bunch of children.
I didn't say that. You're on about moist knees. But speaking of moist knees, Latelaf, we want to talk about his second goal actually, because that header for me was absolutely sensational. Alain Gilbert went full to Gilbert. And that ball over the top, by the way, and just the header, Uno Magnifico for me, but it's going to be on Flory. Like, I don't know what you thought of it at the time, Tom. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it? Because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a great ball. To be honest, I didn't realise until after the match who had played it. I thought it was Harrison.
Same, actually. Yeah.
I think I was just about tuning out from the match at that point. I think I was looking down at my phone and I've looked up just in time to see the ball played. And I was like, it's gone too far. And then Ladilaf just jumps out of nowhere and manages to get his head on it. Not only that, but to loop it over the keeper and into the back of the net as well. I was like, where the hell did that come from? But then that's obviously given us enough of a belief in the last, 10 minutes and 9 seconds of the game and no more.
How is that?
Yeah, just mad. But it gave us that belief that we could equalise. And honestly, in that 10 minutes that followed, I thought we were going to get that equaliser. I thought it's going to finish 4-4 here.
I'm just watching it now, and I think my favourite part of the goal, and there's a lot of good things about it, Alex Gilbert's ball, the awareness of Ladilaf, but it's actually the dive of Melier. It's that desperate, despairing, stretching backwards dive, and then the ball lands in the back of the net. That is a wonderful, wonderful goal. It's such a high-quality goal that just really sums up Ladilaf at the moment. He's a striker that is playing so incredibly well. The best that we've seen him play, scored 9 goals in his last 10 appearances for Borough, and just the ability to get that goal bound despite... He's not even really facing the goal, is he? I'm going to try and see it now. So Gilbert picks up a brilliant position. Yeah, he makes a good run, and as he heads it, he's facing behind the goal. It's an unbelievable goal and probably my favourite this season, I'd say.
Imagine if he'd have scored those 5 1-on-1s against QPR. What goal record he'd be on now? We'd be looking at another person hitting 20.
Well, Bernie, he's scared soon, you know, he'll be shaking his boots. Imagine the scenes, honestly, if someone breaks a record again.
I'm just imagining Bernie and Chew were just packing the stuff up from the Cleveland Center.
I was thinking that.
Box sales were going down in the pan, honestly. But I want to chat about Alex Gilbert for a moment, because for the last couple of games, especially Southampton, the one against Leeds as well, for me, he's looked like he's really started to show his quality, and he's not being a Gilbert, he's being a Gilbert. So would you like to see more of him, Tom, before the end of the season? And where do you think he'll be next season?
Yeah, I think he deserves a chance towards the end of the season. We've got 2 games which are essentially, you know, meaningless in terms of the results. Like I said earlier, I still want to see us win them, but I think he's a player who would give us a good chance of that anyway. After the last couple of games, I really don't want to see Sammy Silveira on the left. I've advocated it for so long, but just stick him on the right. If you're going to put him anywhere, put him on the right and use him as like...
Put him on the bench.
Right from the bench, because Jones isn't moving away from the right. And honestly, he only has one thing, Silveira. He just cuts inside and looks for that shot. We've all played against that person at 7-a-side. It's easy to defend against them. Johnny knows that. But...
Hi, Stan. Are you listening?
But you retire for 3 years. That's all he does. And I found myself last night saying, don't shoot. And I don't think... I can't remember the last Borough player that I've shouted at to not shoot. Might have been like George Boateng or something, but... honestly, he had one in the first half where in one split second it looked like it was going in the top corner and then it swerves off into Rose Ed. And I'm just kind of like, how have you even managed that? But yeah, just drop him out. Realistically, in the last 2 games, there's no point in playing Sam Greenwood. I don't think Greenwood's going to be here next season. We don't need him to kind of like contribute to the results. You may as well give Alex Gilbert a chance to show what he can do. And I'd like to see that in, you know, as many kind of other positions as possible as well. You know, AJ Matthews made his debut last night. I'm not suggesting we drop Ladilaf for him or anything like that, because if Ladilaf goes on to score a hat-trick against Cardiff, then 20 goals might be on. But yeah, just give him a little bit more of a chance. Same for any of the other youngsters on the bench. You may as well, and get them used to it.
Yeah, I think the only downside, it might be become like a financial decision. Sounds ridiculous, but like players get a good chunk of cash for making the debut. So it's like, I wonder if like Borough have kind of got that incorporated to kind of say, well, actually, should we probably do that or not? But just be intrigued to see what the implications would be financially on that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Next season, where would you like to see Alex Gilbert, Tom? Do you think he's actually got a... think he's going to be at the club, or do you think he'll go out on loan?
I think it's going to have to depend on who we sign over the summer. I was thinking during the match last night, I'd like to see Sammy Silvera loaned out. So it potentially opens up a space in the squad if he is the one to go out. Potentially both of them if we bring in, you know, a couple of people. But Dana, I know you're dying to add something about Silvera.
Dana, you've got a wonderful thing here. You've got a wonderful thing to do here from the meme I sent you yesterday with Jose Mourinho, the head coach.
Oh, yeah.
when he kicked the ball out wide, there was two things that went in my mind. I was like, one, the headphones, and so you going, yeah. And then the second one was, wow, that was Dana on Pro Clubs the other night.
It was. Oh, my God, it actually was. Oh, no, yeah, I've become what I hate. No, that was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I think to the listeners and viewers as well, so we're playing Pro Clubs at the minute, you know. Mainly just me, you and Matt at the moment. Tom hasn't got the game yet, but hint, Tom. But we called our team Club de Football Options Dawn. You know, we play some good stuff, don't we? There's got Matt Rowney on the right, he doesn't change his name. You've got the Sausage Man up front. And Jim Clarkson sent defensive mid. So, I mean... I tell you what, if you want to watch it, maybe we do a series in the summer, who knows? But yeah, you became the Sammy Silvera of Club de Football Options Dawn. So,
Honestly, I will say with Sammy Silvera, I'd love nothing more than for him to shut up my dislike of his performances. But I can't put a lid on it. I just think he's bad. I'm sorry, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be honest. I just think he's really poor. And I don't think that about a lot of Borough players, because I at least see something in them. I don't see anything with Sammy Silvera, and I haven't since pre-season. So kill me, shoot me. I've been critical over a Borough player, but I can't see anything. I think he's probably a League One standard player, to be honest. And you think about the teams that were linked with him. Yeah, when we signed him, it was Plymouth and a Scottish team, right? It was like St Mirren.
Stoke maybe, as well.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it basically paints a picture.
I feel like you just don't want to associate yourself with Sammy Silvera because of your pro club character, personally. I think Sammy Silvera needs to go on loan and prove why we bought him. That's, and there you go. And that's, you could say it that way. That's a much nicer way of saying it. But no, you've ruined his hopes and dreams and ruined our chance of getting him on the podcast.
To be fair, I did say that. Like, I'd love nothing more than for him to shut me up and, you know, prove me wrong. I'm not the only person that thinks it. I will say that.
Anyways, but
I'm the same. Like, yeah. I want every Borough player to succeed. Like, there's no point in having an agenda against your own player or anything like that. We should all want every Borough player to succeed. But at the moment, 100%. He's not. And, you know, if Alex Gilbert has done enough in his sub-appearances to at least earn a starting place in the next couple of matches, in my opinion.
Well, it's probably a good time to announce our next guest on the podcast. Sammy Silvera coming on next week. No, he's not really. He's actually definitely not really. That is, please don't take that literally. But probably the final question I got for you is before I move into the prayers in place. I think I know who's not going to be in Dana's prayers in place. We conceded 4 goals, obviously, last night. First time since the 4-2 defeat to West Brom. Remember that in August? That feels like ages ago. But if you could replay that game, what would you like to see, like, different to what we did?
I'd like to see us be stronger in those central areas. I know that we were massively up against it out wide. We were poor out wide. That was our key weakness. But I feel like a lot of the moves the Leeds created that ended up out wide came from central areas. And in 2 of the 4 goals that we conceded possession and gave up, well, not gave up duels. We were weak in duels in the central part of the pitch. O'Brien and Housen, I thought in the first half, they struggled. O'Brien improved in the second, so he redeemed himself. But God bless Johnny Housen. He must have thought it was 2010 because he was playing for Leeds at times yesterday. He kept losing the ball. He kept losing the duels. I don't know what goal it was because there's just so many goals and I'm not used to it, but it was the Nonto one and the Somerville one. So the 3-2 and the 4-2, we conceded possession in central areas. It was Housen for one of them, and then we had a duel in the middle of the park for the other one. This was the Somerville goal, actually. Bamford played a loose ball in field, and it was a 50-50 between O'Brien and Jorginho Rutter. And O'Brien slides in, and as he slides in, Clark pushes up, and it leaves us massively exposed, because if O'Brien loses that duel, there's space there to attack it behind. As it was, he lost that duel, and then Leeds spring and they attack us in that space that was vacated, essentially. So yeah, we needed to be stronger in that middle area of the pitch for me, and obviously out wide as well. But I was getting quite frustrated. Although I was enjoying the game, I was also getting quite frustrated with how weak we were against the ball in central areas. So that was like, yeah, if the game was replayed, I would have liked to have seen us win more of those duels, be a little bit more aggressive, keep the ball better, retain possession better, look after it better. We didn't do that, and it undid us for 2 of those 4 goals.
Tom, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, but I think for me, it's just a case of, you know, don't get him in that net and score on the other one. Way, lads. So I don't know if you've got anything else to add to it, to be honest. But for me, I think defensively better. I think it's just kind of like the key term I think anyone wants to talk about. But
yeah, I think the thing is, Leeds have lost a couple of games this season. I think it was Sunderland and Blackburn, the examples that were given from what I saw last night. And they were both playing kind of quite conservative football in an effort to keep Leeds out. And win the game. The context of that game last night mattered because we had nothing to play for in terms of the league. So in that context, I'd rather we kind of stuck with the same formation and tactics that we have last night, because we've got our style of play, and I want to see us continue developing that ahead of next season. I want us to bring through players into this style of play, or you know, develop the ones who are already there and have one eye on next season while we're doing it. So it doesn't come down to kind of like entertainment for me or anything. I'd love if we could replay that game again in the same way and we win 4-3, for example. But if that game was worth something, I'd rather we went with a different plan. as we've seen Carrick do a couple of times this season, Leicester being the main example, and we play more solid football and, you know, try and grind out a win. Given the context of the game and what it was and what it meant to us compared to what it meant to Leeds, I'm happy with the formation we went with last night and the tactics that we played. It wasn't to be, and we were playing, like I say, a stronger team. And I don't mind saying that because I don't really care about Leeds, to be honest. I'm the wrong side of the river to be caring about Leeds. But yeah, I don't want to say I wouldn't change anything, because obviously I'd love us to do better in the duels that we were losing, and, you know, getting turned so quickly at the back and stuff. But it would have always been difficult for us. You know, maybe if during the summer we can just add like big horrible bastard of a centre midfielder who was going to win those duels, and you know, a bit more pace in the areas that it mattered, then, you know, replay that game a year later, and, you know, we might have a much better chance. But yeah, like I said, because it didn't mean anything to us in the league, I'm more than happy that, you know, we stuck to our system and tried to beat them using that.
All right, then. Well, let's move on. Let's chat and talk and praise and do all that fun stuff. It's time for the praise and place. Ah, yes, the praise and place. The only place where to give praise to a player, coach, or staff member. Dana's new tattoos, Tom's wonderful hair, and all of us being back together. Tom Green, I'll come to you first. Who is in your praise and place this week?
Sammy Silver? No, it's not. For me, it's Latte Laugh, because I don't think you can have a praise and place without mentioning Latte Laugh this week. You know, what is it now, 6 goals in his last 7, or is it even more than that?
9 in his last 10.
Yeah, he's been doing outstandingly well. Picked up this this good run of form. Hopefully he can keep this going in the next season, because looking ahead to the next couple of games and where we could potentially finish, we could have signed a striker that no one had ever heard of before this season. And being realistic, we've probably got like 1 in 100 people who might have heard of him because they've signed him from St. Gallen on FIFA or Atlanta or wherever he was at. Was it St. Gallen?
Yeah, he was on loan, like, but we got him from Atlanta.
Yeah, I knew he was on loan, but I just thought I've just named a random Swiss club there. It might not have even been them. But yeah, we've signed someone who not a lot of people had heard of before. Same with Rav Vandenberg, and they've come more than good this season. And, you know, Latte Laugh could be looking at a return of 15-plus goals for this year for his first season in the Championship. So the scouting team also deserve to be in the praise and place for the find there, because that is one hell of a signing, clearly. And, yeah, hopefully he can continue that on to next year. And as a second and third star for praise and place, I'd also like to mention Finn Azaz and Isaiah Jones. Like I said earlier, I think the three of them have got a good kind of connection slash bond building up front. It seemed a lot of the time when Azaz got the ball, he knew exactly where Jones was going to be. Or, you know, sometimes it was like they laugh as well. I think the majority of the time it was Jones, and he was playing those overlapping balls. I'd like to see kind of more development between those three and see what they can bring next season.
Well, what do you think, Dana? Who's in your praise and place?
Yeah, I'm going to go with whoever scouted Latte Laugh. I will never take lightly Borough finding a striker that actually scores goals, because I can assume that that's quite difficult to do, or maybe not difficult to do, but difficult to bring in a striker to the club that scores goals, because a lot of the time when there are known goal scorers, particularly in the EFL and particularly in the Championship, they're courted by the parachute payment teams. Tom Cannon. I was going to say Troy Parrott. Tom Cannon and Leicester. So yeah, to the person who was sat watching St. Gallen games and decided that Latte Laugh was worth a bid, thank you. And also, I want to mention a moment in the game yesterday, which I really quite enjoyed. And it was Alex Bangura's tackle on one of the quickest players in the league, Dan James, because I was thinking this is surely the fifth goal. Absolutely not. Bangura, with his insane, his whimsical comedic comedic. Fucking hell. You can tell it's late in the day. We're ending the season soon. Comedic running style. Gets in there. Really good tackle. Wins the ball. And I quite enjoyed that. So, yeah, Alex Wenger is an interesting one because I would quite like to see more of him next season, certainly.
Yeah, I'd probably like to see him in the next game, to be honest. Then I think more short-term, end of the season, finish on a high. He had a bad injury against Chelsea and for him to come back as well. He's had a really difficult season this year, Alex Wenger, in terms of injuries, but you can definitely see there's quality there. And for me, I'm going to go with, obviously, one, like a laugh, I think he has to be in there. But then two, I'll go for Alex Gilbert. Alex Gilbert, I think he's been really good the last few games he's came on. He's influenced games, and that's all you can ask for someone who's fighting hard for minutes. And I think he's now surpassed, I think, 100 minutes in a Borough shirt this season. So congratulations to Alex. But also, like, contributing to goals, and all he needs now, Dana, is to score against Cardiff or Watford, and you never know, you will have a good prediction.
Imagine, and honestly, imagine if that happens in the final two games of the season. How I have plucked that out of the rear end of someone's rear end is ridiculous, because that opinion, that prediction was really, really bold. So if that actually comes to fruition, I'd love it.
Yeah, well, I've got Adam Reach vibes from when he came on as a sub and then he scored like the last goal of the season or something. It was in a 3-0 win or something.
Kevin Thompson assisted it, actually.
There you go. When he wasn't injured every game, Kevin Thompson.
I love that you can remember that, Tom.
You know why I can remember it is because I was in college at the time and I was doing a project in A-level PE where I had to talk about different parts of my football game and why a professional footballer was better than me. And for passing, I picked Kevin Thompson. And I don't know why I picked Kevin Thompson. I think I was a really big fan of him from Footy Manager at the time. He used to bang in screamers from 25 yards out on Footy Manager, which I'm sure the real Kevin Thompson's never even dreamed of. But yeah, I had to do a full kind of analysis on Kevin Thompson's range of passing and why he was so much more of a better passer of the ball than I am. So when he got that assist, I was like, "See, I was right," but no, I wasn't.
I would back you to thread a perfectly weird through ball to a striker over Kevin Thompson.
Oh, no, then I've seen Tom there. No.
Okay, I retract that statement. Then you must be bad.
Back then, I was an inverted left winger. I was what you hate. I was Sammy Silvera.
Tommy Green Vera. Anyway, let's move on. We'll go to Stoke. They're not Stoke, Cardiff. Oh, my God, I've made myself off.
We are losing several brain cells on this podcast, guys. Bear with us.
Look, it's been a long day, you know.
You're not going to get me out in Cardiff,
because we were on about Stoke earlier, I think. See, that's what happens when you've got a really weird brain. Anyway, we'll go to Cardiff in search for a win that is... will mean absolutely nothing, to be honest. Maybe some financial gain at the end of the season, a bit of pride in a game which is now known as a dead rubber. I don't know really what consists of a dead rubber, but here we are. But what's the first thing that comes to mind when we think about Cardiff, guys? I'm thinking Cameron Archer's goal last season. I feel like that was a good one, but I don't know what you guys have got in terms of memories of Cardiff away.
It's Richie Smallwood scoring in a 3-0 away win.
Richie Smallwood.
You know that.
Richie Smallwood.
He was Richie Smallwood after that game. I think it was his first goal for the Borough, but I think it was a 3-0 win. It was quite a while ago. It was another game that didn't mean anything at the end of the season. But I remember Richie Smallwood scoring in that game. I hadn't mentioned him in my A-level PE, but I think it was around the same time. I'm sure we can probably hit a ball better than I can.
Dana, have you got any fun memories of Cardiff?
Well, this one ain't fun, but it's Ashley Fletcher scoring an own goal within the first 2 minutes of the game, and that being the only goal of the game. So that was fun.
So congratulations to Ashley. So hopefully, Dana, you're going to predict something a bit better this time around. Do you think we'll win, lose, draw, match abandoned, match not even be played? What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I'm dying to like give one of those crazy predictions where someone just randomly says like 5-0 out of the blue. I think Tom had his Was it you that said it? Oh, yeah, it was Tom.
It was me that said it about Swansea at home.
Yeah, it's that part of the season, isn't it? This part of the season where it kind of can go a little bit bonkers. We already had a bonkers game yesterday, but you know what? I'm going to go... No, I'll leave it for what? I'll leave it for the Watford game, I think. 2-1 to Borough against Cardiff.
Tom, oh my God.
3-0 Borough. Matt Hill have to score. Matt Clark to score. And Richie Small... No, not Richie Smallwood. AJ Matthews to come off the bench and score.
I want to go with Richie Smallwood, Richie Delatt.
Kevin Thompson.
Scotty.
Kevin Thompson, Scotty and Hamilton Rickards.
Abel Zania.
Actually, I'm going to go 2-0, actually. I'm going to go 2-0. Like a laugh hat-trick, I think.
Anyway,
I'm so glad you caught on there. Anyway, I'm wrapping things up. I've had enough. So, listeners and viewers, thank you very much for watching and listening. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and subscribe to Borough Breakdown podcast channel. But Borough got Cardiff on the road to a 7th position. But if we win, there's no way you're getting me out in Cardiff on the Saturday night. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was like Borough Master Chat in the pod. Up the Borough.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.